97.1 FM Talk. On-demand audio. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
You know, I said this earlier, despite the holiday, I feel like this week is going by terribly slowly, but we'll get to Friday tomorrow. We're going to have a Reardon Roundtable at 3, former state senators John Lamping and Jeff Smith. Something tells me we'll talk about the Missouri congressional map and that chaos and mess, which the very latest, by the way, in case you haven't heard, is Denny Hoskins, the Secretary of State, has agreed to use the 22 maps. So the old maps in November, not the new maps. There is still some work to be done before the 8th Circuit for a request for a preliminary injunction, but that's not going to happen at the earliest until next week. So it is kind of a mess. Got a lot of national attention, but it looks like voters who voted early August will be disenfranchised and not have the same congressional maps, which is utterly confusing to me. We'll get into it tomorrow. Paul Hall with some movie and streaming recommendations. I can't wait for Brothers, which I think starts next week on Apple TV Plus with Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson essentially playing fictionalized versions of themselves, but that looks pretty entertaining. So we'll get into that. We'll have Cusimano here, of course, the big Mizzou game with KU tomorrow night. We can talk about that with our next guest, too. The assistant director of the FBI might not be the top of his mind because there's a lot of things going on, but Andrew Bailey's here and he's a big Mizzou fan. How are you, MIZ Andrew? Good to have you on.
ZOU, my friend. I'm expecting big things out of Lawrence tomorrow. Hopefully, Mizzou can. Yeah, I think I read a statistic. We've only won in Lawrence like three times since 1980. That's crazy. Let's make it four.
I have to tell you, I'm nervous because the line in this game is only like 5.5, and I feel like we should win this thing by like 2 or 3 touchdowns. So I hope that they exceed expectations tomorrow. And I liked what I saw from Austin Simmons last week, so we'll keep our fingers crossed. But you're going to be in Manhattan for 9/11 ceremonies tomorrow, won't you, Andrew?
Yes, sir. I'm in New York now, prepared to honor the memory of those who have fallen and those who served. Look, this was a devastating attack, the worst terror attack against the United States in our nation's history, and it forever changed certainly the trajectory of my life, causing me to go into the Army in a combat arms role and deploy to Iraq twice, changed the lives of so many other Americans, and certainly it changed the history of the FBI. But we want to be here to honor those that have fallen and those that continue to serve.
Yeah, well, let's circle back to what happened in your situation, because I think some people, you know, despite the fact that you were here as Attorney General for a short time, might not know your background and your story and kind of how you got to the point where you are. But it was 9/11 that sort of inspired you in that moment to go into the military?
Yeah, look, I was going to Mizzou on an Army ROTC scholarship in 1999, planned on being an Army attorney. I remember sitting at my residents and watching the planes hit the buildings and understanding that my life would forever change. Volunteered for a combat arms branch of service in the Army, so didn't go to law school at first, went into the Army as an armor officer, trained on tanks, and then ended up in the last heavy armored cavalry regiment as a platoon leader, later a company commander in 2 different deployments to Iraq. But proud to have served, and certainly, like I said, want to honor those who continue to serve to this day.
You know, I said this earlier in the show, and I've said this yesterday. I don't know why it is, but for whatever reason, this 25th anniversary of 9/11 is hitting me harder than the previous anniversaries. I'm spending a lot of time this week listening to some of the audio, watching some of the video. I've seen some of these, you know, documentaries. By the way, there is what I think might be a really good documentary on the MLB Network tonight, which focuses on baseball and baseball's, you know, role in recovering from 9/11. I was in Milwaukee, by the way, the Cardinals. I was supposed to go to the game that night. The Cardinals were supposed to play the Brewers on that Tuesday night, but the MLB Network will have that tonight. But I don't know why it is, and maybe it's part of it because I want people who are not alive or people who might not have remembered as much of this to be remembered or to have a memory of how horrific this was for this country and for the world on that day. I mean, when you watch these videos and you're reminded of not only the planes going into the towers, Andrew, but, you know, when the towers collapse, you know, there's people watching, just hanging out in Manhattan, looking up at the explosions, being amazed that something happened, and then all of a sudden these two ginormous buildings just crater and fall to the ground.
Yeah, I mean, just again, a devastating terror attack that killed more than 2,700 innocent victims. And you think about the firefighters, the police, FBI special agents and professional staff who raced down to ground zero to the buildings as they were collapsing in order to begin recovery operations, response operations, and just the toll it has taken on the victims and their families and the survivors. I mean, just an enormous matter. I watched in shock and horror as it happened, and I watch in shock and horror today as it seems like too often people in leadership positions have forgotten or neglect to speak with moral clarity as it relates to the evils of the jihadist terrorists who attacked us in an unprovoked, devastating attack on 9/11 and the innocent victims who lost their lives, but the heroism that was on display by the men and women, first responders, is really remarkable.
And the heroism of those people on Flight 93, and I'm going to focus on that with some audio here. My mother used to work for Airphone, Andrew, and she would go on planes. It was kind of a fun gig, and she'd teach people how to use these phones. Her boss in suburban Chicago was a woman by the name of Lisa Jefferson. Lisa Jefferson is the woman who took the call from Todd Beamer and was on, you know, the phone with him for like 20 minutes. And poor Lisa Jefferson, you know, you talk about the families and the people who are connected to this. She had so much stress and PTSD in the aftermath of this. She had to quit her job at Airphone. So there were so many different people who were affected throughout the entire country that had, you know, whether there were relatives or family members or friends that were in New York or on one of these planes. I mean, I never want to forget the Pentagon. You know, we don't seem to talk about that. You probably know this because you're in D.C. I was there for the opening of the 9/11 memorial at the Pentagon, and that's quite a sight. And the 9/11 memorial in New York City is something that everyone should see because they did a great job with it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Look, the coordinated attack, right? And it took a lot of preparation. And look, but prior to that incident, prior to 9/11/2001, the FBI treated terrorist attacks as crime scenes to be investigated after the fact. What changed after 9/11, after more than 4,000 special agents and 3,000 professional staff participated in this investigation after 9/11, the largest investigation in FBI history, we changed our strategies. Now we're forward-leaning, proactive. Instead of just waiting until something happens, and then investigating as a criminal matter, we now work to investigate, dismantle, and disrupt before the attacks happen. And the numbers that we put together over the past year have been remarkable. More than 700 different arrests and terror cells disrupted. So these are truly remarkable numbers. And it really goes back to refocusing on the core mission of the FBI. And when we do that, we can deliver real results, and it makes Americans more safe, and it makes Missourians more safe.
You know, I think one of the things that a lot of people were confused by and didn't understand at the time, and I'm thinking that this has really grown a lot, is that there was not as much, and we find this even in some of the serial cases, you know, the killer cases from the 70s or the 80s, certainly in the 80s and 90s, that there was not as much communication with the FBI, with local law enforcement in different agencies, and that was something that certainly got corrected in the aftermath of 9/11, wasn't it?
Oh, completely. Look, we had joint terrorism task forces stood up across the nation, but those doubled, quadrupled in size in short order. And I'm proud to say that just in my time at the FBI, we've actually eliminated administrative burdens that allow local law enforcement to participate on those joint terrorism task forces. Last year alone, we added 2,770 more local state officers on our JTTFs because we're eliminating the red tape. That's more communication. And what it's about is getting the intelligence from the top down to the people that actually use it to make the arrests, the disruptions, the dismantlement of those terror cells.
So what do you have anything that you're doing right now in your role that is specific to that? Or are you doing a bunch of different things at the same time?
You know, just trying to cover all the bases.
Yeah,
at once.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what's unique about the Bureau, right? I mean, we've got the Criminal Justice Information Services where we put together the Uniform Crime Report that was just published that shows the most remarkable reduction in violent crime in this nation's history, certainly within the last century. We manage laboratory and forensic analysis, evidence recovery and response, special event coordination with the FIFA security. But then we've got our standard criminal investigations. We've got our national security investigations and operations. We're a component of the intelligence community. So you roll that all into this massive operation, 38,000 employees, 56 field offices, more than 60 law enforcement attachés overseas. It is a large, dynamic, complex organization of which I'm proud to serve. And again, with the mandate coming from the very top, from the White House, from President Trump after his historic election win, to make America safe again, refocus on that core mission of protecting the American people and upholding the Constitution.
Andrew Bailey is here. He's the former Attorney General of Missouri, current Assistant Director of the FBI. Will you have an official role tomorrow in the 9/11 ceremonies?
You just there to observe, honor, and remember, and be a participant. I don't have a speaking role, but certainly want my presence to demonstrate that we honor all of those who fell, and certainly the 34 different employees of the FBI who are now on our wall of honor, whose deaths are directly attributable to those events of 9/11.
Amazing. All right. Well, listen, you can't say enjoy the moment tomorrow, but I know it's going to be very special and the country is going to be watching as well. It'll be very interesting to see if Mayor Mamdani becomes a focal point, because there's some people that are encouraging him not to be there. But Andrew, it's great to hear from you. I hope that you can have a great ceremony tomorrow and that we can both be, you know, relaxing tomorrow night about 10 o'clock celebrating a Mizzou win over KU. Let's hope for that, right?
Hey, God bless you, my friend. M-I-Z.
Z-O-U. Take care, Andrew Bailey. I mentioned Lisa Jefferson. I want to, you know, in the next couple of days, I did this yesterday and certainly Tuesday, I want to sprinkle in some things because some of this you've heard before over the years. Some of it you need to hear again. But Lisa Jefferson was the airphone worker. I told you she was my mother's boss, actually. And Todd Beamer made this call. And, you know, this became legendary because of what happened on Flight 93 with those heroic passengers. And, you know, Sue, one of the things that I've noticed, and I don't know how much time I'm going to have here to play some of this audio, but there were so many people that made phone calls to their family members, and they sounded more calm than I think anyone could ever calm. Maybe it was because they mentally wanted to tell themselves, don't panic their loved ones, even though they knew they were going to die in all likelihood, right? But it's been remarkable just to hear the tone in a lot of the voices. Now, you know, you got people out there. This is what drives me nuts. I ran across a Twitter account today of someone who was trying to make the case that these phone calls were all fake, that there was not the ability to make a cell phone call in 2001. There was, of course.
Mean,
in fact, it was easier at that time because there wasn't as much competition.
Right. Turn
and,
off this,
right.
Yeah.
So you could do it, and these planes were flying at a lower altitude, okay? So, by the way, for people who might think that, what do you think really happened there? You found 3,000 people, or just look at the people on Flight 93. They were all involved in this, and they all agreed to be killed because it was some sort of conspiracy, and we brought this on them. So it's just incredible that this stuff spreads on, you know, social media, and that people actually buy into it.
Yes.
It's crazy. But here's the phone call that Lisa Jefferson had with Todd Beamer, and her talking about some of this.
When I took the call over, there was a soft-spoken, calm gentleman on the other end. He told me that there's three people that have taken over the flight. At that point, I asked him his name. He told me Todd Beamer. He was from Cranberry, New Jersey.
Did you make a conscious decision not to tell Todd about the World Trade Center? Why?
Yes. Because I wanted him to have hope. I wanted him to think that he still had a chance. I didn't want him to feel like it was just totally hopeless, and he definitely didn't have a choice, and he knew he was going to die. I didn't want him to have that feeling.
When he wanted to pray, was your sense then that he knew that?
Yes, I did. I felt that he knew at that time, because he had said, oh, Jesus, help us. And then he said, Lisa, would you recite the Lord's Prayer with me? And I knew that he knew at that time that it wasn't much left for him to do.
What do you think that this country needs to know about the men and women who were on board Flight 93?
They're all heroes in my eyes. They really are. They all pitched together, and they did what they thought was the best thing to do at that time. And I feel that Todd played a great role in that, because when he told the guys, are you ready? I assumed that they were waiting on his cue. Then they responded to him, and he said, okay, let's roll. Mm.
And would you please help me welcome his wife, Lisa Beamer, here tonight?
She called me that Saturday morning. I told her, I said, you have two boys, David and Andrew? She said, yes, I do. I said, you're expecting your third child? She said, yes, he told you all of that. I said, yes, he did. And he wanted me to let you know that he loved you and his family very much. And I gave her a message and kept my promise.
You know, I texted my mother today, and I was asking her to remind me, because, again, Lisa was her boss at Airphone. And that was a phone call, by the way, that took place with an Airphone. It wasn't with a cell phone, right?
Right.
And it was relatively new technology. But my mother reminded me that Lisa had really, really tough time dealing with this and had to, quit and retire, of course. So this is
great,
Edward
by
Felt.
The way.
Oh, amazing,
I
right?
mean,
so this is from that flight. This is Edward Felt, who's making a call from Flight 93.
Hijacking in progress. Excuse me? Hey, somebody's reporting. Hijacking in progress. What? Sir, I'm losing you. Where are you at?
United Flight 93.
Wait a minute, wait.
United
Flight 93.
Hijacking in progress.
Okay, where are you out of?
I'm in the bathroom. United Flight
93. Okay, where are you at?
So, you know, the guy is, they're both frustrated. Edward's trying to tell him what's happening on the flight. But again, Flight 93, okay, like, where are you? Yeah. Where is the actual plane, right?
How's he going to
know? Where the plane
well, right.
Is.
Where did you take off at?
Newark to San Francisco.
Okay.
I get it. Okay, stay on the phone with me, sir.
I'm trying to. At the bathroom.
Okay.
Hey, somebody get the FAA. Newark to San Francisco. I got a hijacking in progress.
Okay.
Get somebody from the airport on the line. This is a hijacking in progress.
Are you still there, sir?
Yes, I am.
What's your name, sir?
Edward Felt.
Edward Felt. What's your phone number, sir?
732.
Go ahead.
241.
Go ahead.
6974.
How big of a plane, sir?
That's a 757.
This is a 757.
I mean, this is crazy that they're communicating this all at the same time, right?
757. Sir?
Yes.
Okay, how many people's on the plane?
It was pretty empty. Maybe.
And from there, there's not a lot of communication, and at a certain point, it kind of goes dead. Which, you know, that's when they tried to take over from the hijackers, and they landed, you know, in the field. They crashed in Shanksville. Here's Linda Gronlund, who also had some words from that Flight 93.
Alpha, Glenn, I only have a minute. I'm on United 93, and it's been hijacked by terrorists who say they have a bomb. Apparently, they have flown a couple of planes into the World Trade Center already, and it looks like they're going to take this one down as well. Mostly, I just wanted to say I love you, and I'm going to miss you, and please give my love to my dad, and mostly, I just love you, and I just wanted to tell you that. I don't know if I'm going to be able to tell you that again or not. All my stuff is in a safe. The safe is in my closet in my bedroom.
She gives the combination out here.
Keeper clear, and then 0913, and then it should, and maybe pound, and then it should unlock. I love you, and I hope I can talk to you soon. Bye.
I mean, I don't even know how you put that into words. And then, you know, some of the other calls that were happening at the same time from the top of the World Trade Center towers. And there were people who knew that the planes had crashed and that there were explosions and that the building was on fire. And they knew that they couldn't get down to the ground. There was no way. The only way they could have been rescued is from the air. And that was, you know, a long shot. So the amount, and Linda in particular there, I mean, she tried to, again, maybe some of these people made these calls knowing that they didn't want to scare the crap out of their family members and they didn't want to leave them with the memories of them crying and, you know, the horrifying experience that they had. But just the fact that they had, and some people had moments to make calls to see if they went through to say goodbye to their loved ones. And this happened, you know, in the World Trade Centers and at the Pentagon as well. It's 5:21. We'll take a break. We're coming back in a moment.
Get more at 971talk.com.